Blog Talk Radio.
From the shootings of Marines to the issue of gun-free zones on U.S. bases and broadcasting from a squat refurbished red, white, and blue single-wide trailer. Kelly O'Connell, 606, 17th day of July and 2015. It's raining outside, believe it or not, and I got Mike McKay with me again. He had such a terrible time yesterday, he decided to come back and just see if
make
it
up for yesterday.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll see what I can do.
So, anyways, it was great. Mike's a very, very strong counterpoint. So we were talking about that this morning. don't assume that everything that's said on the show is just from the heart. It could be just a polemical response. But what was your reaction when you saw this article about the shooting of the Marines?
Oh, well, I was watching it yesterday, the coverage throughout the day, another tragic event. You know, what can one say about, you know, things which will inevitably happen because they have these so-called lone wolves out there doing these things, and you can't keep everybody on the radar screen.
A few things came to mind for me, though. Number one, is this going to be another situation where the government refuses to say this was a Muslim terrorist attack?
Well, that doesn't seem to be the case at all. They're using the term terrorist right off the bat. So there doesn't seem to be even remotely reticence at this point.
But, you know, the Fort Hood shooter, he's running around shooting, screaming Allah Akbar. And the government, for some reason, didn't ever seem to be able to get its head around the idea that he was a Muslim terrorist.
Well, I think that you're the lawyer. I think there were legal technicalities about calling one thing this thing. But in the end of the day, what difference does it make?
523-1450. The difference is, Mike, that people don't want smoke blown up their rear ends when there's a tragedy.
Listen, this is a terrible, tragic thing. Four Marines were killed. I'm not even sure if it was the first location or the second location. But if you put it all in the context of how many people have been murdered in this country in the last year, which are the tens of thousands, and we don't even discuss these things. And this is, you know, there is a war on terror. These are situations, but this is the world we live in.
It's the world we live in. That's whenever I hear a story like this, introducing I'm going to say source from Schwab. Is there any with clear trend in the future is going to happen in the United States where we can differentiate between Islam and other religions?
It's the new way.
I think we do it every day.
When
people do it, it's
to make
a constant
smart move.
Daily conversation.
Start now and get 500 free trades for an entire year. Schwab Trading Services.
Exactly what Islam is about. It's part of our daily conversation.
But will we ever have a change in the law, do you think?
What, outlaw Islam?
This country was built on religious freedom. It is shocking to think about changing anything, any part of that.
Well, I don't know what you're suggesting. Are you suggesting that we should enact a law that we will outlaw Muslims?
No, but I have thought about this quite a bit. There seems to be an apples and oranges difference between Islam and any other religion. What if you defined Islam as a political movement with a religious aspect to it?
Who defining? I'm not quite sure, you know, what the platform is here.
Federal or state, or it just seems to me that if you hear about a religious murder, shooting, catastrophe, whatever, anywhere in the world, you the first thing that comes to mind is Islam.
Murders happen every single day. I think there were, 35,000 gun deaths in the U.S. in the last 12 months. And we can't even have that conversation.
We can.
With regard to
2000
the amount of guns and ammunition and,
on
and AK-47s. We can't even have that conversation.
They're on a freaking base and they can't defend themselves?
Well, that is something.
Gun-free zone?
Who says they can't defend them?
Well, they can pull out their zip knives or whatever, but it's why do you have a military base which is focused on training people for the martial arts?
Because we have a tradition. Why are you looking at me frustrated? I'm giving you a response. We have a tradition in this country, and it's been on for hundreds of years, that the military is armed when they're overseas, and when they're home, they're not. Can we have a conversation? Is that practical in this day and age? Perhaps it's not. Perhaps the conversation we should have is, obviously, they should be able to, they're very well trained in the use of weapons. So therefore, we have people who are trained and know what they should do with their weapons. The conversation should be about maybe we should revisit that
today. Something entirely new is being
old
built
tradition and change that so they can defend themselves in that new situation. I'm all for that, and a lot of people are having that conversation.
I agree. We need to have it. I've got a
just
clip of this
rinse
thing.
And rinse. So you can blast right through tough messes and pick up more fun.
Aren't we clever?
Thanks, man. Look at how much easier New Bounty with Dawn cleans this gooey mess versus soap and a sponge.
Thank you.
New Bounty with Dawn. Available in the paper towel aisle.
Obviously.
A breaking news last night, but this is from yesterday, of course. It's just... I don't know. It's heartbreaking to see over and over and over again this kind of the same scenario where, Mike, you see a Muslim name or something that could be a Muslim name, and you just jump to the, according to you, maybe the wrong conclusions immediately.
According to me, what? What wrong conclusion?
The wrong conclusion to assume that it is Islamic terrorism as opposed to kind of suspending disbelief a little bit and letting the facts kind of direct you.
Well, obviously, I don't know any of the salient facts, but with regard to that, I'm not reluctant or hesitant to say that this would appear to be an act of whether an individual acting on his own or as part of a network, a radical Muslim terrorist attack. It would appear to be that. There don't seem to be at this point other motivations that he had a grudge because he was drummed out of the military or whatever. it appears to be somebody acting as a terrorist and motivated by what he believes the Quran tells him to
sure.
do.
All right, so
that's what it would appear to be.
We've got the clip right here. Sitting in with Mike McKay, arguably the most successful broadcaster in the history of Mesilla Valley. Kelly O'Connell, 613 and 523-1450. Here is some of the shocking story about this gentleman that came and killed four apparently unarmed Marines.
Around 10:45 this morning, the first shots fired. A witness says a silver Mustang convertible pulled into this plaza lined with military recruiting offices.
He just pulled up, and I didn't think anything of it. He had his drop top, and he looked to the side, and next thing you know, he lifted up his arms like this with a big black gun, and just it was one shot, and then it was just endless shots, one after another, just unloading.
From there, the alleged shooter, now identified as 24-year-old Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz, took off, racing to a Naval Reserve Center about 7 miles away. Police responded, giving chase, catching up with him at the reserve center where a gun battle broke out.
They arrived on the scene extremely quickly, and they actively and enthusiastically engaged this brazen criminal.
The response by the local law enforcement was overwhelming. They were able to neutralize the threat.
Four Marines were killed on the scene. At least three others were wounded. Sources tell CNN the shooter also died on the scene. It was all over within 30 minutes. A former recruit is devastated to see the aftermath.
Would you kill the people that volunteered to protect you?
We are treating this as an act of domestic terrorism.
And late tonight, a law enforcement source tells CNN the FBI is working the case as a potential terrorism investigation.
Well, right there. I mean, a potential. I mean, I know you can't jump to conclusions, folks. I think people, on the one hand, I understand this. There's a need not to jump to conclusions. On the other hand, it just seems like this reel that keeps repeating. Just, you know, change the names in it, and it's the same story. There is something about Islam, Mike, that it's just different than other religions.
Well, certainly there doesn't seem to be any reluctance to suggest that's what this particular case was. So that scenario doesn't seem to be continuing. Again, people are saying we don't know all the facts yet, but it certainly appears to be an act of Muslim extremism.
America invented religious freedom as the world knows it. And I'm the last person to ever change that, but...
Serena Williams.
In the interest of survival.
Years.
You know, that's Master. I don't know what else to say. And again. 523-1450 if you have an answer. What if you defined Islam as a political movement with religious overtones? I mean, experts on...
I mean, one shot.
Many of them say that's actually what it is. You know, before...
Technology designed for you.
Definition
so you
of
can
salvation.
Easily master.
They've already got this political empire set up. So that's one of the reasons that I kind of think that way.
Well, I'd like to hear more.
Four U.S. Marines killed in these two attacks on military installations in Chattanooga. As yet, only one of those individuals publicly identified. He is Marine Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Sullivan.
That said,
he's 40 years old. There are reports he has worked in the past as a Marine recruiter. The names of the three other Marines killed in Chattanooga have yet to be released publicly. We also don't know the names of the three individuals who were injured but survived. The official reaction to the shootings in Washington has been muted, though the Department of Homeland Security said it is enhancing the security posture of certain installations. The president, for his part, expressing condolences of the federal government to the victims and their families.
With some sort of law that would...
A heartbreaking
separate
circumstance
Islam
for
from other
these individuals who have served our country with great valor.
Sure, what we would do
In 2011,
to be killed in this fashion. I speak
more
for the American people and
the largest category
expressing
of
our deepest condolences.
Radical Islam in America.
So the case continuing to be treated as an act of terror until terrorism
you're talking
is
about
ruled
overall.
Out.
I'm talking about overall. More people die in America at the hands of domestic terrorism than than Islam.
That may be true. Some people will say they'll give him time.
Well, we're talking about the here and now and what has been, but we're talking about history. So
statecraft is looking into what's happening now, projecting into the future, and figuring out how to avoid worst case scenarios. So anyway, it is 6:18. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. I'm Kelly O'Connell. Pleased to have and very delighted to have Mike McKay here. And 523-1450 is your number. I'm Kelly O'Connell, 805-6180. We're going to be right back and continue this investigation into this dreadful murder of unarmed Marines. And my question is, why not arm these people? Are on a freaking military base. Be right back. All right, folks, it is 6:23, and it has been raining outside, so it's obviously, you know, it's fairly pleasant. It's not too hot out right now, of course, in the morning, 76 degrees, high of 97, and low of 70. It's going to be cloudy, so we don't know, have to wait to see how much it rains today, but hopefully we'll get a nice dose of it. Anyway. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, render unto God what is God's. A Christian view of the separation of church and state and the obligation to religion. What is it for a Muslim? What is it for a typical Muslim? What is it for a radical Muslim? Obviously, we know radical Islam, you kill in the name of God to further your cause. But believe it or not, 81% of people that they polled after ISIS started up in the Middle East, said they supported the methods and goals of ISIS.
81% of whom?
Of Middle Easterners, of Muslims.
81% of Muslims supported what ISIS is doing.
Yes, and I'll have to find that, but shock.
Well, I would speculate that seems wildly high. Just by virtue of the fact that Sunnis hate Shiites, and vice versa, and there's so much antipathy between Muslims themselves. So I would find it difficult to believe that 81% of all Middle Easterners support the acts of ISIS. It just doesn't seem to compute.
Well, and that's what I've been trying to tell the audience ever since I saw ISIS and have studied the Sharia law in detail. Every single thing that I've seen them do has some defense in the Sharia law. And that's why when people call for Sharia law in America, I think that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But also the methods and
how many people are calling for Sharia law in the United States?
Well, there's been prominent members of the president's cabinet or prominent members of the president's circle. Cass Sunstein, who's regarded as one of the top legal scholars in America, has taught at Yale and Harvard and everything, has called for Sharia law to call in. Harold Koo, who was put up for the Court of Appeals, and he ran, if I'm not mistaken, Yale, called for Sharia to come in. Now, not full Sharia.
I'll be honest with you. I've never heard of either of those individuals, but if in fact those two individuals have called for Sharia law in the United States, I would say that they're probably in the minority.
But this is elitism.
This is not something that I've never heard of those
Mike,
people.
Elitism. There's a lot of these people who are part of this elite.
Who is the first guy you mentioned?
Is Cass Sunstein.
Cass Sunstein.
You know who his wife is? Samantha Powers. You know who she is? She's in the, you know, she works for the government in the State Department. Samantha Powers, she's from Ireland. These two, I guess, met at law school, but she is.
What is Mr. Sunstein's ethnic background? Do you have any idea?
He's Jewish,
and he would be calling for Sharia law.
I don't really understand. I'd like to have a conversation with him because I did an article one time kind of analyzing the idea, and it struck me as everything good about our law you would want to keep if you brought in Sharia. The stuff that's not good would be so terrible, Mike. I mean, our law is preeminent over that law in terms of, say, due process, human rights, free speech, freedom of religion. Let me ask you, is there freedom of religion in Muslim-dominated countries?
Well, they would say, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm sure some would argue, yes, that they are. I mean, after all, both Christianity and Judaism is recognized as people of the book by Muslims.
Dhimmis.
Hmm?
The Dhimmis, that's the people of the book.
Okay. Again, the idea of one guy who you mentioned, who I've never heard of, calling for Sharia law, even though this man is Jewish, and he is saying that the United States should enact Sharia, seems ludicrous, and I don't think he's going to have a vast following. People who are getting on board with that anytime soon. So I don't think that that's something that the rank-and-file American should have to worry about.
All right, I've got this article here from Daily Caller, but there's a large number of articles on the same topic when I looked it up on Google. An Al Jazeera poll asked if the Islamic State is beneficial to the region, and a shocking amount of respondents voted yes. The poll on the TV channel's Arabic language website asked, do you consider the Islamic State's advance in Iraq and Syria to benefit the region? With over 50,000 votes cast, 81% answered yes and 18% answered no. 50,000 people. So, but they're Arabic speakers, you know. And so anyway, what I'm saying is, Mike, consider this. The view of the world is so much different if you're a Muslim than if you are a traditional Westerner. Is there anything we can do to protect ourselves?
Well, one might suggest that we leave the Middle East to the Middle East and worry about our own area of influence.
Iraq was a huge mistake in retrospect.
Sure. Saddam Hussein, monster that he clearly was, kept things in check and also kept Iran in check. Now the government in Baghdad very much aligned with Iran and we're supposed to be supporting the government in Baghdad. That hasn't turned out very well for us at all. Again, the Muslims themselves are at such odds between the Sunnis and the Shiites that left to their own devices, let them work it out themselves and remove ourselves from that that area of the world. What's wrong with that idea? Is that a crazy idea? I think that's less crazy than some, you know, rogue guy, whoever you mentioned, saying that we should have Sharia law in the United States. I mean, again, that is not something, that's not a debate that's going to gain traction anytime soon.
Well, let me throw this to you. We can say walk away. We've just made a huge deal with Iran. We're not walking away from the Middle East. We're trying to micromanage it.
But you said, what can we do? My suggestion is get the heck out of there. I mean, for example, you know, we talk about the terrible time that we lived through in 1979 when the Shah fell and it was the Islamic revolution in Iran and the hostages and so on. Terrible time. But again, there was resentment in Iran against the Shah, who was a repressive leader and, you know, had his favorites. And if you weren't among his favorites, you know, life could be pretty bad. And they had a democratically elected president back in the 50s who was toppled by a CIA coup. This is not some wild left-wing liberal theory. That's part of history. And the Shah was put in place. The next 30 years, go on 25 years or so, there's a tremendous resentment against the United States. I mean, that's the root of the problem. I mean, that is the root of their resentment against us, death to America.
Yeah, and I'll throw this towards you. I think that George W. Bush was well-meaning. He lacked information. He lacked a vision. But he was going to go into Iraq. He was going to create a democracy. And the people living around that, you know, all the other Middle Easterners would look over. They would see the prosperity. They would see the freedoms, the democracy, self-rule, and they would say, "Oh my God, we got to have a slice of this."
Sure. The domino effect, spreading democracy throughout the Middle East.
Yeah.
Be careful what you wish for, because democracy allows people to vote. And in this particular case, you know, the Shiites now, and I sometimes get confused, correct me if I'm wrong, the Shiites rule Baghdad now.
I don't even know.
Saddam Hussein was a Sunni. They are a minority in Iraq.
Yeah.
And so ISIS is Sunni. They're fighting back against the Shiites. It's Shiite versus Sunni. If the United States and the rest of the world basically step back and said, work out your own problems. I mean, this is where it comes down to, why are we there in the first place? Well, it's obviously oil. It's minerals. It's involved.
How about this? That is the locus of three great religions, and we have an enduring interest in there. And our best buddies in the world, Israel, just happen to be stuck over there. And that's one reason we're over there.
Okay.
Folks, we'll take a break. Talking to Mike McKay. He's got me on my toes. 633 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in. I'm Kelly O'Connell. And, 97 supposed to be the high today, about 70 the low. We'll see how it pans out. We'll be right back. We got to continue to talk about this a little bit. Let's get rid of these stupid gun-free zones on bases. That's ridiculous. That's like not having, you know what, Mike? That's like not having gauze and, sutures on at a hospital. That's ridiculous. Folks, we'll be right back. It's 6:38, and we got a situation out there where we keep getting these Muslim attacks. Now, somebody calls in. Mike's putting on a good face for religious liberty here, and somebody has the audacity to text me, Mike McKay is such an apologist for liberals.
Well, that's interesting. That person can come up with that. I'm apologizing for liberals because we're talking about one specific point. Therefore, that person somehow can look into my mind and know my beliefs on all subjects. It's a typical knee-jerk reaction that one often finds from extremists on the right or on the left.
Well, maybe we should ban extremists while we're at it. All extremists.
All extremists. What would happen to KOBE then?
Call in if you're an extremist and your way of life is threatened. 805-6180 to text 523-1450. So anyway, Mike, we got to get rid of these stupid gun-free zones on military bases. I mean, that's like that.
Well, certainly there's as it applies in this particular case, military tradition, notwithstanding, that goes back hundreds of years. It is time to readdress that, to talk about it, because recruiting centers in particular are particularly soft targets. I mean, after all, there has been a call by ISIS to attack members of the military here in this country. Part of the problem, though, all they need to do to get us all excited is just threaten something, and we get all crazy about things. However, and very often, things aren't actually addressed specifically. Here is a case where I think that that particular tradition needs to be readdressed because recruiting stations and other are particularly soft targets. So that needs to be looked at and perhaps reversed.
Well, and can you say Fort Hood shooter? I mean, how many people would be alive now if they didn't have the, if you had let these people on this base have this, and this guy with a Muslim name screaming Allah Akbar, shooting people, it rankles the average American that the government has never called that a terrorist shooting.
again, I don't know what the legalities for that is, or whether or not how people being tried. Regardless, I mean, he was arrested and he will never see the light of day again.
The Major Hassan. Now, here is another clip from RT, and it's this is shootings at Tennessee military recruiting centers. When Mike says they're soft targets, you bet they are. There's four Marines dead now that should have been packing heat. And check this one out from RT.
Well, new details out of Chattanooga, Tennessee, where officials say a gunman killed four Marines at two separate military facilities, then died in a shootout with police. RT correspondent Anya Parampil has the latest from RT Studios. Anya, what do we know about the gunman?
Hi, Simone. Well, a U.S. official confirmed the identity of the shooter with CBS this afternoon. They've ID'd him as a 24-year-old Mohammed Yusuf Abdulaziz, reportedly a Kuwaiti-born U.S. citizen. Law enforcement officials also held a press conference this afternoon confirming some of the other details that had been floating around since the news broke of this shooting this morning. They confirmed that a total of five people are dead as a result of the shootings that took place at two separate locations this morning. Abdulaziz is among the dead. The four other casualties are Marines who were killed at a U.S. Navy Marine Combination Center. Officials will not confirm, or actually they have confirmed rather, and said that Abdulaziz was killed by their officers. Now, President Obama spoke on this tragedy, which occurred around 10:40 a.m. local time in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where Abdulaziz opened fire at an assault weapon at an Army National Guard center, firing some 30 rounds into the building. That's where one police officer was shot in the ankle, but he fortunately is in stable condition and being treated in the hospital. Two other individuals are also wounded. Law enforcement then pursued him to a second location, that Navy recruiting center, where the four Marines were killed. And that's also where Abdulaziz died. Now, authorities say he was armed and carried out this attack with multiple weapons and did not work at either of the targeted locations, but not much else is known about his background.
All right, so that's the basics, the basic outline, and my argument would be you're in the military, you can carry a weapon.
I won't argue against that, and obviously a lot of people are having that discussion. I don't know how I'm sure that discussion was started even before the Fort Hood shootings. I don't know where they are in as far as that goes. I don't know what the military standpoint. I mean, this is a military decision. I mean, in other words, Barack Obama didn't say the military can't carry guns. It had nothing to do with him. It goes back hundreds of years. This is a military decision. And I don't know what the arguments on both sides of that issue would be. Nevertheless, it's a good discussion to have.
It is a good discussion. We got a caller. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Bruce.
Yes, Mike.
Yes, you guessed. Hey, Kelly, I agree with Mike. We ought to get rid of these gun-free zones. They're all soft targets. And wasn't it Clinton that put that into effect?
No.
That's what I've been reading.
No, this is a military tradition that goes back hundreds of years, that the military is armed when they're overseas engaged in warfare, and when they're back home, they're not.
Kelly, what's the deal with Clinton on this thing?
I don't know. I don't have an
You know. If anyone knows, you know. A big buddy of Cass Sunstein.
Yeah, well, I mean, he is, but Cass Sunstein was part of the inner circle when Barack got into power. But anyway, be that as it may, gun-free zones, that's like making Baskin and Robbins get rid of sugar and dairy products. It's absurd.
Well, how can we expect our military guys to go over and sacrifice their lives and they come back home and they can't have a weapon? They got to turn it into the armory. I mean, does that make sense? I mean, the rest of the world, they're making our military look like wimps, making them march around in high heel shoes. I mean, it's a laughing stock.
What?
And this Obama, I know the Clintons.
What's the marching around in high heel shoes part of this?
Well, check out Alex Jones. He's got a real good article on it on InfoWars. They're transgender stuff, trying to bring it into the military. I mean, it's BS.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
Mike, with all due respect, you're talking BS now. You're not making any sense. Let's move on.
Thanks for the call, Mike. All right, folks. So, what we're talking, well, Mike was talking about was they're bringing in a new law for transgenders to, and we've got another call, but transgenders to be in the military. And how is that going to affect, how's that going to affect the military? Here's another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly Tonno Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. This is Chris, and just got up and I was listening to your show. And you guys need to look it up because it is Bill Clinton. He did take it out back in 1993. That's one of the first things they did. So that was the only thing I wanted to add, but it is true.
Okay, thanks for the call, Chris. I've got a picture of Bill Clinton very proudly leading a bunch of troops that look like it's from a cut from the movie Stripes, just not carrying any weaponry whatsoever. And here's from Breitbart. It hasn't always been the case that only MPs can carry firearms on U.S. military bases. A mere 20 years ago, gun-free zones made their way to these facilities under the watch of President Clinton.
Well, okay. Perhaps I'm wrong about that particular thing, but as a veteran, that goes back, I was in the military between 68 and 70, reserves for longer than that. Nobody was carrying weapons then. Unless you were an MP and you were involved in law enforcement or working undercover and so on. Typically, the military does not carry their weapons domestically. So that was long before Bill Clinton.
All right. So, well, got to take a break.
I guarantee in recruiting offices for decades, if not hundreds of years, they're not carrying weapons. Should they now? Perhaps we should look at that and have a different argument.
Got to look at that. If you're trying to call in, I got to take a break right now, but call back. Talking to Mike McKay about this, he's got military experience. I don't. What do I know? But I'll tell you one thing. Having individuals be able to come onto a military base with weapons and pick off our own soldiers like a shooting gallery makes me just want to vomit. Kelly O'Connell, 648 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. Gonna finish this up, and then I got Doug Grotheis. And speaking of strenuous activities, an MMA fighter on the next hour. 651, real nice outside right now, and it's been raining a little bit, of course, so there's rain in the forecast today.
One of the few places in the world when you have a cloudy, rainy day, and people say, isn't it a beautiful day?
Makes you feel good, doesn't it? Okay, so talking about guns on military bases and sitting ducks, you know, are soldiers trained to kill, trained to defend, getting just picked off? At what point do the people rise up and say we've got to have different rules for Islam? According to Mike, maybe never.
I say never, of course. You know, we talk about the Second Amendment and how it is so rooted in our Constitution, and that's why it's so difficult to have a discussion about the control of weaponry. Well, just as rooted in our Constitution is the freedom of religion. So it is not going to happen that suddenly we ban one of the world's major religions. It's
crazy question. Crazy question for you. What if Islam is not a religion? This is what I was thinking. All right. The other night, I had this kind of epiphany. We always say religion is peaceful. It leads to understanding and peace and forgiveness and all these. There's a certain category of things that we think of when we think of a religion. What is in these categories? What does this religion contain? What if Islam does not have the most quintessential elements that we Americans ascribe to religion?
Well, we consider ourselves, well, many people would say we are a Christian nation. Well, we are a Judeo-Christian nation. We are a nation based on the precepts of Christianity and Judaism and so on and so forth. Well, look at the history of Christianity. I was raised a Catholic, grew up, didn't hear a lot in catechism about the Inquisition. But later on, when you study different things, I mean, That went on for hundreds of years. Terrible things have been perpetrated in the name of religion, various religions, throughout history.
All right, so we went through a Reformation. We went through this period of time in Europe, this ferment and everything, and Enlightenment. Islam has never gone through that. When are they going to grow up?
I don't have an answer for that, obviously.
Folks, we'll take a break here, and you're listening to AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE. 523-1450 to Colin. We'll be right back and finish her up. Got Doug Groteis coming on the next hour. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. This is Brian.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
I'm headed out the door, but I just heard your guest say that there wasn't any. He thought it was crazy that Sharia law could happen in the U.S. or whatever, but in Europe, happened they had enclaves of Sharia law. And I was reading a Washington Post article about. Now they took away her husband died, and they took away her property, and the Supreme Court of Greece said that they had to let it be decided by the Mufti.
Holy cow.
Or whatever. Anyway, that's an April 13 Muslim woman fighting Sharia law in Europe thing. So I got to run out the door to work, but I just thought.
Bring that up.
I don't know if. Binding arbitration or enclaves of communities is ways that basically Sharia law starts taking hold.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian. Have a good day at work.
Bye.
All right. They're doing it in Europe. Decisions, they have Sharia courts in Britain. They do divorces in Sharia courts in Britain. And a lot of other things. Is binding arbitration? No.
Incident where basically an Islamic ghetto, that all the parties involved were Islam, were Muslims.
Exactly my point. We'll finish with that. Kelly, 655, and just got a call from Brian who said, what's happening is that in Europe, where, Mike McKay can say, I've never heard of this gentleman, no Sharia law over here. But in Britain, in Europe, they're doing it. They've got whole sections where Muslims have come in, they filled up neighborhoods, they block off streets at noon for their prayers. They're having Muslim courts. And Mike says to me, well, what's wrong? What is wrong with having Muslims under their own law?
When did I say that?
Well, you seem to imply it.
No, I just said that you mentioned somebody calling for Sharia law in the United States, and whether or not individuals exist who have done that, that's certainly not going to take off or gain any traction with regard to your enclaves within Europe that govern themselves with Sharia law. I can't address that necessarily, but you're not suggesting that in Britain, Christians are being brought into a Sharia court? Are you?
No, that's not happening. But what's happening is the law of the state is being superseded by Sharia in some instances. And it's an absolute travesty. I mean, how can you have a foreign nation's law controlling individuals living in your state?
Well, we always talk about state rights here in the United States. Different states have different laws. From one state to another, it changes.
Yeah, but it's constitutional. It is totally unconstitutional to bring in foreign law and set up foreign courts here. It's just absolutely so far beyond the pale.
It is so far beyond the pale that any discussion about Sharia law being enacted in the United States on a universal level, that it's not even worth talking about. It's not going to happen. Nobody's calling for this, except that one guy you mentioned.
Who happens to have the president's ear and be very close to him. And this other guy, Harold Koh, they're trying to put on the appeals court. Anyway, folks, 6:59. Been here with Mike McKay. I had a real workout talking about Islam and this most recent shooting. Do we need changes? We'll take you out of here. And next hour, I've got for you the exciting Doug Groteis and then an MMA fighter to round things off. Be right back.
the tone, please record your message to
Rebecca and Douglas Grotheis.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Yeah, just reading over some things about this body part controversy. Just beyond horrible.
Yeah, we just had a discussion on the air about the shooting.
Right.
And with the gun-free zones for the military, which is totally ridiculous.
Right.
That's like getting rid of scalpels in a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. Did you want to talk about that at all?
Well, if you want to talk about it a little, that's fine. But, I mean, this guy, Cass Sunstein, was asking for Sharia law. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, we could jam on that a little bit.
All right, and then kind of move on to body parts.
Yeah, two happy subjects there.
So I guess Bill Clinton made these. We're on the air, by the way.
Okay.
Good morning. It's 7:06 on the 17th of July. It's raining outside right now. I've got a guest with me. Oh, well, at least on the air, my old buddy Doug Grotheis, who teaches at Denver Seminary, and he has got a doctorate in philosophy, and he's published a lot of articles and books on various topics related to philosophy and religion and such. And we decided we would come on and do a little bit on this outrageous story about these abortion providers who are actually taking parts out of fetuses and selling them, the same time saying these are not human beings, but they're selling the body parts. An unbelievable, ghoulish and everything. But also, I think we want to get into this issue of the shooting, these unarmed Marines and Islam and everything. But good morning to you, Doug. How you doing today?
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Kelly.
Absolutely. You sound a little tired there. I hope we didn't get you up too early.
Well, you get me up early, but that's fine.
All right. Well, I'm sure it's got some health benefits.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. So you had said, let's talk about this fetal body part issue. But can we get into this shooting of these four unarmed recruiters first?
Yes, I think it's another evidence of American decline, the inability to think clearly about things that are extremely significant. And it's also utopian. The idea is that this is a gun-free zone, so therefore shootings won't occur, or shootings are less likely to occur. And when you think about the kind of war that Islam has declared on America and Israel and other nations, it's insane to disarm the military. I mean, it's insane in principle to do that, but we've had these terrorist events, the Boston Marathon shootings and the Fort Hood shootings and all the rest of it. The body count is piling up, and then you have Marine recruiters who don't even have a way to defend themselves. And if they did, maybe one person would have been killed or one person would have been injured. It's extremely unlikely that four people would be dead and several others would be injured. So it's the result of this view that Thomas Sowell calls the unconstrained vision, that humans are basically good, and if you change some things in the environment, then you will cut way back on crime, poverty, and all the rest of it. And it's pure unreality. It doesn't take seriously Judeo-Christian teachings on humanity. It doesn't take seriously world history. And this is not a small mistake. This is people's lives, the people who should be defending America.
Well, you know, I'm so disgusted listening to these people who they have pacifistic ideas. You're putting together pacifism with the military, you know? I mean, yeah, that's right. Just absolutely crazy. That's, you know, it would be like taking scalpels away from operating rooms out of the idea that scalpels are dangerous.
Well, it's something like that. It's really nonsensical. I think of, a few months ago, Obama wanted police uniforms to look less threatening. Do you remember that one?
No, I didn't.
I don't have the details in front of me, but the notion is that there really aren't criminals. There aren't people who have evil intentions. They're conditioned by their environment to do one thing or the other. So if you make the environment more friendly, and police officers more like, I guess, Cub Scout masters, then people won't get violent.
Well, this is fallacy of behaviorism, right?
Right. You undermine human agency and the ability for humans to, first of all, understand to some extent good and evil for themselves. And then also you undermine the idea that people have the ability to do one thing or another. So it all shifts back to society. And ultimately, although society and the state are not the same thing, it ends up in the hands of the bureaucrats. So how do we somehow coddle people, mollify people, certainly not frighten them, but how do we simply help them to develop and become more warm and fuzzy? And that's insane, because in a fallen world of selfish people, we need authority, and we need, in some cases, the threat of the enforcement of that authority. And that's why we have police. That's why we have the military and so on.
And so Paul says the sword does not hold the state does not hold the sword in vain.
That's right. Romans 13, 1 through 7 is the key passage in the New Testament about the role of the state. And then also Jesus' statement in Matthew 22 that we should render to Caesar's what is Caesar, to God what is God's, and Caesar is not God.
Yeah, so I want to just bring up here the vision of the elites that Thomas Sowell talks about. There's a small group of people that are, and this is not out of any kind of a Judeo-Christian standard. Some people claim it's out of this Gnostic tradition, but it's a belief that is heavily embedded in Marxism, that there is a small layer on the top of society of elite thinkers and decision makers who are there to lead the blind masses into salvation, into the secular salvation.
Right. I think you see that. It appeals to human pride and the quest for power, power over principle. Certainly saw it in Marxism. The result was over 150 million dead, killed by Marxist states in the 20th century. And you see it in contemporary statism. You see it with Obama. You see it with the Democratic Party. That really, we don't have to be an educated citizenry. In fact, that benefits the Democrats. Because when people don't know history and they don't know much about political science, they simply vote their interests apart from anyone else's interests. So people think, well, if we get another Democrat in, then I'll continue to get this welfare, or I can get some other benefit. And people don't think about the downside of this, which is massive bureaucracy, money badly spent, death panels in public health and that sort of thing.
But
you're right.
Yeah, Doug.
And also this idea of elitism is against our founding documents.
Well, benevolent tyranny versus non-benevolent tyranny. In other words, if you give the government the right to make a massive number of decisions that affect personal lives, people's choices, what we used to call the zones of liberty, and the government is good, for a while it might seem like there's something positive going on, but all of that power amassed in a few hands at some point becomes it's just a ticking time bomb.
Well, that's right. That's why the ideals of the country and the founding documents stipulate a limited state, the division of powers, all sorts of checks and balances on human power mongering, And we're not seeing that now. We're seeing this idea that the state can do it better. And that is a fundamental assumption that has to be
challenged.
Yeah, it has to be challenged. And, wait a minute.
And you know, Doug, one of the things I've noticed is the people that are most ambitious for to become a tyrant, a dictator, whatever you want to call it, these people seem to be the least trained, the least capable of doing that type of thing. Let's take a break here. And folks, talking to Doug Groteis about, we're going to talk about selling body parts to fetuses, even though they're not human beings, so that other human beings can use this stuff. But anyway, Doug Groteis, and it is 7:15 on the button. We will be right back to continue this discussion with a little bit of Islam mixed in. And I want to say, too, that we've got an MMA artist coming on a little bit later, 7:45. So we'll be right back. Hey.
Yes.
I've got some Maynard Ferguson Portuguese love. Have you ever heard that clip?
No. He was good, though.
Can you hear it?
Oh, that's what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, it sounded good.
Yeah. Well, you know, nobody could cover the high register that like that guy.
That's true. Yeah, there was a guy that Duke Ellington had towards the end of Duke Ellington's career named Cat Anderson, who was pretty amazing in the higher register also. So if you get any Duke Ellington from about 1960 on, you'll probably hear this guy.
Hmm. Yeah, as a matter of fact, well, I ran into this album in U of O. Hollywood is the name of it, but...
I'll have to get that.
Yeah, well, you can find it. All the songs are free on YouTube at this point, now that he's passed.
Yeah.
So, well, I think I'm going to come back and ask you if we could possibly differentiate between Islam and other religions based on this general argument that there's a certain number of things that are in contingent or that are inevitable. In a true religion, the argument out there to defend Islam is there are a number of things that are quintessential within it, religion. And are these things quintessentially within Islam? If they're not, can we treat it as a political movement?
Sure. I'd love to talk about that.
And then how that would possibly fit in with our traditional beliefs.
Okay.
It's raining here.
Well, we've been having rain all summer.
It's been, yeah, real wet up there.
Whole summer. Yeah, it's been kind of depressing back in Oregon.
Well, they're not getting the rain in Oregon, are they?
Haven't followed that. That's odd.
They're in a drought.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, it must be the fault of greedy capitalists in some way or another.
It all goes back to global warming, my friend. Don't be a doubter.
Don't be a Holocaust denier.
Reminds me of the scene in the movie Midnight Express where Brad Davis is walking the wrong way and the guy stops him. And the guy actually said that he had been a philosophy professor until they'd brought him to the Muslim prison and re-educated him. And he told Brad Davis he was a broken machine. That's before Brad Davis, I think, around the time that Brad Davis goes crazy. Have you seen Midnight Express?
No. No, I haven't.
It's a great movie, man. It's one of the most exciting movies I've ever seen. Here we go. We're on the air. All right, folks. We got Doug Groteis on the phone, my old buddy from Oregon, who just happens to be a internationally renowned author and has written a number of books on philosophy and religion, et cetera. Doug, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I got to ask you, is it possible? I asked this earlier, Mike McKay, is it possible that Islam doesn't have within it the traditional things that we say are part of religion: peaceableness, forgiveness, long suffering, a willingness to bridge disagreements with your enemies or whatever you call them. Is it possible that they don't have that inside of them? Therefore, they're not what is considered a religion in the American experience.
Well, the question of what is a religion is a little bit vexed because there's so many elements. There is this. We have the historical element, the doctrinal element, the ritual element. But let's go down to the moral center here. All religions in the world have either the golden rule, Christianity, or what is sometimes called the silver rule. And the golden rule is to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's positive. It's affirmative. And other religions have something like, what you don't want people to do to you, don't do to them. It's a little more passive.
Buddhism.
Yeah, I think so. Now, Islam doesn't have the golden rule. A lot of people assume that, but it's not the case because Islam divides the world into two categories, Islam and the infidels.
It is the Dar es Salaam and Dar es Harbi, the kingdom of God and the kingdom of war.
Right, exactly. Or as they sometimes put it, the house of submission and the house of war. So you do not owe the infidels what you owe the Muslims. This is in the Quran. This is in the Hadith. It's in Islamic history. And it may be epitomized in the whole institution of what's called dhimmitude, which means that when Islam takes over a culture and you have people that have not been killed or have not been converted, that is Jews and Christians, then they are subjugated by the Islamic authorities. They have to pay a poll tax. Their worship is limited. They often have to wear special clothing.
Yes, jizya. Here's one of the most remarkable elements of Islam that people in this country cannot possibly fathom. We're talking about dhimmis, which is Jews and Christians. Those are the people of the book, of the Bible. They're allowed to stay in a Muslim territory, but they have to sign a treaty of non-war. It's called the jizya. It's got to be paid yearly, because you have to pay for somebody to take your place in the army, because a Christian or Jew cannot be trusted in a Muslim army. And if treaty, jizya, if it lapses, then you can be killed by anybody in that society with impunity.
Well, yeah, I learned a little bit about that, Kelly. I appreciate it. I need to look into that a little bit more. But here's a way that Islam deceives people. They'll say, well, Muslims are the defenders of Jews and Christians. When Islam controls the society, they are defended. Rather, the Jews and Christians are defended by Muslims. Well, actually, as you said, paying the tax simply means that you are protected from being killed by another Muslim. And if you haven't paid the tax, then, as you said, it's open season. And I remember there was a rally a couple months ago where Muslims said, we are the protectors of Jews and Christians. So we don't want to kill them. We don't want to subject them. And everybody was celebrating this. And I thought, my God, what ignorance and idiocy. Do you have any idea what the protector means? It means dhimmitude. It doesn't mean giving equal rights under the law. There's no concept of that in Islam, that everyone, by virtue of being a human being, has intrinsic rights and therefore should be protected. They should not be subjugated. They should not be killed.
Your ability to have rights in an Islamic country depends on your relationship with Allah. And if you are not a Muslim, you don't have inherent rights. And so that's why the idea of human rights has never appeared in Islam, has never flourished. But this dhimmitude, there have been a number of books. Bat Yeor has written a number of books on dhimmitude, and what a tiered society that creates. It's second-class citizenry. And this ancient Treaty of Umar says that, for example, this is one of the oldest treaties in history. This is a foundation of Sharia law. For example, a Christian or Jew cannot build a house that is higher than any Muslim house.
Right. That's a significant element in Islam. That is also, if you have a Quran in your home as a Muslim, it needs to be the highest book in the house. And if you put a Bible above a Quran, you put the Bible on the fifth shelf of your bookshelf and the Quran on the third, that's considered a horrible insult to Allah.
Yeah, and you have to ride, shows how old this law is, Christians and Jews have to ride side saddle. They cannot mount around Jews. A Christian or a Jew have to get out of the way if Muslims are coming.
Right.
Yeah, they just have to get out of the way. I mean, it's this incredible archaic view of life, and it's a foundational elements in the Sharia. Yeah.
Well, it's fundamentally hierarchical based on religious affiliation. And Westerners are supposed to abhor that sort of thing. But now there's talk about having Sharia law as part of the law of the United States. And that comes out of this failed idea of multiculturalism, that all cultures are equal. We shouldn't favor one culture over another. So why adhere to the Constitution of the United States when you could have the influence of other cultures? What's wrong with that? Are you closed-minded? All those kinds of nonsense, thought-stopping lines.
But if you bought into this idea, here's the problem with this, is anything that would be in agreement with the Constitution, we wouldn't need to bring in from Sharia. The things that are in conflict
right.
with the Constitution are not just unconstitutional, but tend to be horrifically lacking in due process in human rights. It would be a complete disaster to bring in Sharia law into the United States.
Well, that's right. And why do Muslims want Sharia law in the United States? It's because they do not approve of the extant law. Can't, at least for now, practice polygamy. They can't, at least for now, have child brides. They can't, at least for now, beat their wives. This is in the Quran. I'm not making this up. This is part of Sharia law. They can't discriminate against Christians because they're Christians. That's in Sharia law as well. And all manner of other things, including food laws, banking laws. It's a totalistic system.
Yeah, and RIBA is a misunderstanding of the usury law from the Old Testament. The Old Testament doesn't stop Muslims, or it doesn't stop people from making interest. It's an unfair interest in the Old Testament, what's called usury. In Islam, it's called RIBA. It's any interest whatsoever. That destroys the possibility of having a modern economic system.
Right. Well, there's just another deleterious aspect of Islamic civilization, and I think you see it around the world also.
And the divorce laws, for example, divorce is achieved by what they call the treble repudiation. I repudiate thee, I repudiate thee, I repudiate thee. If you text that to your wife, the marriage is finished ipso facto as a matter
right.
of, and you cannot say I was joking. That's this very primitive nature of Sharia law.
Well, it's not just primitive. It's unfair. It's cruel. It's sexist. And also, if a man divorces a wife, he automatically gets control of the children. So this terrifies women and keeps them in subjection.
But you've got these slave, you know, people hear about ISIS. Oh my God, it's so primitive. I mean, it's not like real Islam. It is like real Islam because the war of booty. In no pun intended, but the war of booty in Islam, if you're at war with somebody, you can traditionally how they would approach it is any people that were captured, the men are killed on the spot. The women are either turned into wives or concubines, sex slaves, and the children are turned into slaves. And so the idea that you would take women that you've captured like ISIS and put them in slave auctions, which they're doing all the time, is not only theoretically possible under Sharia, but it follows the letter of the law.
Well, that's right. And a lot of Americans are simply ignorant of history, and they want to see everything in the best possible light because they're afraid of being viewed as racist or intolerant or something like that. And that handicaps people's ability to discern evil for what it is. That is evil. You don't sell human beings.
Yeah, so let me ask you this, unless they're fetal body parts and then the open season
yes,
on that, but
correct,
let me ask you this. Could America adapt its law and preserve religious freedom and treat Islam as a political movement as opposed to a religion?
Well, it's both. It's a religion that includes the totality of politics and the totality of society. So I think we have to say, yes, Muslims have First Amendment rights, but they have no right to try to undermine the foundation of the country. And part of that is the First Amendment.
I would argue, Doug, that Islam is a political movement with religious elements. And the reason I would say that is they established the Ummah, this Muslim territory, before they figured out what it meant to be saved in Islam, what they call soteriology in Christianity, how to be saved, is established afterwards. So it's not traditionally a religious movement, even though it is highly reactionary in its religious terms. It is first and foremost a movement to secure territory and people.
Well, that's right. It's a political theocracy first, and then we'll get around to figuring out how to get to paradise. I think something like that is what you're saying.
Well, we'll take a break. And Doug, do you want to come back and talk about this Planned Parenthood auctioning of fetal body parts?
Yes, let's do that.
All right, folks, we will be right back. I've got the MMA fighter here warming up in case we get attacked. And all right, so 7:31. Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 to call in. I can only take one call at a time. So we've got still some problems with the phone system. 805-6180-805-6182. Text, and we'll be right back to talk to Doug about body parts. Oh, really? Oh, thanks, man. This guy's top notch. Doug.
Yes.
It's a Navy SEAL we got in the MMA fighter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can say hi to him through the microphone right there. You say hi to
him. Hello there. Thank you for your service to our country, my friend.
Thanks, sir.
Speaking of the mic, my friend. It's right in front of you.
Can you hear me? Is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it.
Anyway, Doug Groteis. He's got some great books out there if you ever... I don't know if you have any religious beliefs, but he's an expert on comparative religions and apologetics, Christianity. He has written a lot of books. So one of my old friends from the day.
All right.
Nice to meet you, Doug. I was wondering. That's great. It's Doug, right?
Doug.
Glad you guys are in the studio.
Cynthia, she works at the DA's office. But other than that, she's a nice person.
It
happens.
I just put these two nice people together.
Good.
We could talk about what Edgar's doing. So.
Excellent.
Well, I'm going to let you guys go.
Leaving?
Yeah.
I'll give you a call. Okay. All right. Good to see you.
Edgar.
All right.
I will.
All right. All
right. See you later.
All right. We'll see you.
Yeah, but write down your name. And if you're promoting an event, put down the date.
All right, was that on air or was that just done?
What's that? The person you're talking to right now was Doug, yeah. No, it's off the air, but it's recorded on... Good, man. How are you doing? Good to hear. I'm on the other side. Doug, we're up. We're back.
Okay.
It's 7:34 and real nice outside. It's been raining a little bit. The temperature right now is about 75 degrees. 75 degrees exactly, 97 high, 70 low. May not get up to 97 anyway. Got Doug Groteis here. We just have a few more minutes to talk about this, Doug. So give us some background on this sales of fetal parts.
Right. Well, a video was released showing Planned Parenthood's top doctor showing how the abortion business sells body parts for aborted babies. The woman in the video is named Dr. Deborah Nucatola, and she says that they perform partial birth abortions that are illegal and then take great care to get the body parts that are most in demand, and that's usually the head of the fetus. So this has developed into quite a scandal, and Planned Parenthood, of course, is denying that this occurs. But one thing that's particularly barbaric about this is that the video, undercover, of course, of Nucatola, shows her drinking wine and eating salad while she's talking about crushing babies' heads and selling the body parts. And this is illegal to at least sell the body parts. And partial birth abortion is illegal. But if you go to the root of this, it's all based on the idea that human beings do not have intrinsic value, that they do not have, at all levels of life, the natural right not to be murdered.
Well, Doug, what about this argument that they're not really human beings until a certain point? How does a Christian philosopher deal with that?
Well, they're certainly human beings with potential. They're not potential human beings. In this case, as you said, cinches it, really, because if you don't have a human being, then how are you selling human body parts to be used in other humans?
It's like fake plasma, this fake blood that they've just come up with, or, you know, I don't know.
Right. Well, it's insane that somehow these human beings have no rights. They're made into a commodity. It's a merchandising of human fetal parts. So it's wrong, it's evil to kill a very, very young human being, except in extremely extenuating circumstances. But it follows, really, if it's fine to kill them, then why not sell them?
Well, yeah, and I mean, it just follow logically. I mean, it's the reductio ad absurdum, I guess. I mean, there are some places that will take an aborted baby and bury it. But I mean, you know, most of these places flush it down the toilet. So put it in the incinerator. But the argument is, if it's okay to, like you say, it's okay to destroy them in the womb, why not make some use out of them? But I mean, that's the very definition of ghoulishness or cannibalism.
It is. And I think people that are outraged by this, who support abortion on demand, should think about it, because it is a reductio, that is, given abortion on demand, why not use the body parts in some utilitarian fashion? And if you think doing this is barbaric, cruel, and ghoulish, then by force of logic, you should also deny abortion on demand. So maybe this is a time for people to activate their moral imaginations.
Absolutely. I did an article, Doug, I don't know if I sent it to you, but it was on the economic impact of abortion. I'd never seen an article on that. And I figured that there's 150 million people missing from the economy, and that if we had those people working, at least some of them, we would have something like $30 trillion extra in the kitty. So we wouldn't be like 17, 18 million trillion dollars in the hole. We would be $20 trillion ahead. But I mean, it's sad. When I was doing this, I'm thinking it's kind of weird to talk about fetuses or people from an economic standpoint, but the abortionists don't even look at them as being worth that much.
Well, that's right. I think of a book years ago, I think it was 1981, by Julian Simon, an economist, and he said the ultimate resource for human beings is human beings. Human beings create wealth. They bring a love and consideration into the world. You have families. Now, of course, human beings are flawed, but you don't kill them at the get-go because they're going to be flawed.
Well, here's one of the great myths of the abortion industry. If you don't kill these babies, they'll grow up in a bad home. Well, I found that there were 50,000 babies that were adopted each year, but there were 1 to 2 million couples looking for babies, and there were just so happened to be about 1.3 million babies aborted each year. So you would, if you stepped aside, if you let Adam Smith's invisible hand come in, there wouldn't be a problem.
No, there's so many lies and fallacies in the pro-abortion movement. Just think about this. Well, they would grow up in a bad family. Therefore, let's kill them.
Yeah,
it's absurd.
Nonsense.
Isn't it better to grow up in a bad family than to be executed at the beginning of your life? And people grow up in bad families and become good people. So you can't predict these kind of things.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if your mother was a prostitute and she had like 10 kids, should she get an abortion? Yes, of course. And if she's got social diseases, of course. But then you would have just aborted Beethoven.
You could. And even if it's not Beethoven, it's a human being made in the image and likeness of God. And as such, human beings have intrinsic value, and they have the negative right not to be murdered. It's pretty basic.
The
but
original
our culture is morally insane.
Right. The original right in the history of Europe, the rights come out of Europe, out of the church thinkers, and the original right, the preeminent right, was the right of self-defense or to not be killed, not be murdered.
Right. That's exactly it. But that's based on a worldview. It's based on the Judeo-Christian worldview, specifically Christianity, Christendom, as it influenced Europe, as you well know.
Yeah. So, all right. So, what can be done? I mean, what can we? We're told that by this administration that we have right now, that the majority rules when it's convenient, but it just so happens that I think the majority of people are now educated enough to be opposed to abortion.
I hope so. There seems to be a move against abortion on demand maybe in the last 10 years. I hope this fuels that movement, this revelation of Planned Parenthood. And I hope Planned Parenthood is investigated and brought to justice, for that matter. If we elect the right candidate, perhaps Planned Parenthood could lose all or a lot of its federal funding, and it gets millions upon millions of dollars every year for decades.
Well, you know, this guy, we tend to celebrate these billionaires. Warren Buffett has given an incredible amount of millions upon millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood.
Mm.
There's a movement.
Well, may God have mercy on him.
Yeah, well, anyway, Doug, we're kind of coming up on the time that we agreed to. Got a couple of minutes left. What do you want people to be thinking about?
Well, I'd like them to think about truth, the value of human life, the sort of legal system we have. I'd like them to consider whether or not we are committing suicide as a nation by disarming our military, by not recognizing evil as evil, whether it's Islamic attacks on Western civilization or whether it's making the human body into a collection of commodified parts, because that human being happens to be unborn. These are serious, very serious issues, and they demand a lot of reflection and then the appropriate action. And they involve prayer. God have mercy on us. Give us wisdom.
Yeah. Now, how do people get a hold of your website or your books?
Just go to douglasgrotheis.com. That's my website. I've got a very active blog, and I've been writing a lot about matters of gender, same-sex marriage. I'll likely write a blog post about this body part controversy as well. It's very simple. Douglas Grotheis, GROTHUIS.com.
Doug, thanks so much for coming on. I found it very illuminating.
Well, thank you. We'll talk again next week,
okay,
I think.
Thanks a lot. Folks, Doug Grotheis there. Now, I want to thank the Sam Cain Law for funding. He is the sponsor of the show now, and his number 526-5263 in pain. Call Kane, Sam Kane, that is. And he's doing personal injury, motorcycle, car, truck, bus, heavy equipment. If you mention the Kelly O'Connell Show, he'll give you a free consultation and tell you if your case has any merit. Folks, we're going to come back and we're going to talk to an MMA fighter, and we've got an event coming up as well. So it's 7:45, and we'll be right back on the Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 to call in. The line is now open. Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, you know what? Nobody, not even the paper, nobody said anything about the funding for the New Mexico State students. You know anything about that?
I don't. What did you find out?
Well, it turns out that they're not getting all their money at one time. They're going to get money like 2 weeks after the semester starts, and then a month later they get the next 25% of it. And they're all crying like little bitches, you know? And, you know, I mean, they're saying, well, I don't have the money for rent. I don't have money for this and that. Well, you know, that's the whole idea of going out to work, isn't it? You know, and when you're asking for loans and stuff like that, you don't get to dictate how you get the money. You know, you just have to work your life around the people that are gracious enough to give you the money. You know, I think it's a real important topic, but I know, you know, you might not have time to talk about it today, but there's just little bitches that don't know any better, you know?
All right, man, I'll mention that for you. Thanks. That's good. So you're a SEAL. Guess where I went to. Well, 7:47, and what we've got for you now, Edgar Delgado from this area, and am I allowed to mention that you're a member of what you do for a living?
I'm just military.
Military member of the armed forces, so he's got an opinion on this shooting of the Marines that's a little more informed. Southwest Brawl is coming up, and he's an MMA fighter. This is at the Las Cruces Convention Center, and doors open at 6. Fight starts at 7, July the 18th. So let's talk a little bit about MMA.
All right. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me on this morning, Kelly. It's great to be in Las Cruces, and it's great to see it. It's actually, we're getting some rain here. That's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it sure is. Okay, so you grew up here. Where'd you go to school?
So I went to school here. I went to Las Cruces High School, graduated about 10 years ago. I've been living in Virginia Beach ever since when I joined the Navy.
I used to live in Virginia Beach. Nice place.
Oh, right on. Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah, the five cities, the million people there out of the got Norfolk. You've got Portsmouth, you've got Virginia Beach, help me out here.
You got Portsmouth, Norfolk, Virginia Beach.
Yeah, I already
Chesapeake,
named those. Chesapeake,
Suffolk.
All right, there we go.
There you go.
So anyway, it's a beautiful little town. It is a nice beach out there.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, it's not the Bahamas, but it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's definitely not that. It's definitely not Florida either, but it'll do.
All right, how did you get involved in, and somebody says Hampton, but it's Hampton Roads is what they call it.
Hampton Roads.
So how did you get involved in MMA?
So I was doing MMA here when I was going to high school. I was fighting out of a Bone Crusher fight team. It's been doing that since I was about 16. You know, a lot of guys in the military still do it. So I'm actually not fighting tomorrow. I'm the promoter, so I come home once a year, visit my parents, and I try and schedule one of these shows so I can knock out, you know.
You're the promoter.
Yes, sir.
How many? Tell us, how many people fighting?
We got about 13 fights right now, 5 pro fights, the rest amateurs.
All right, so how long is this thing going to last? How long does a cage fight typically last in your experience?
Well, let's see. Fight start at 7. I'm expecting to be out of there no later than 10, maybe 9:30.
I want to ask, is there anything illegal, biting, scratching?
Oh yeah, all that. So the rules are pretty legit. So there's
kicking in the groin.
No kicking in the groin.
All right,
No pulling hair. No biting. No kicking on the ground. It's pretty pretty legit.
Are you allowed to throw dust in your opponent's eyes?
No dust.
All right. Okay. No, so dust. It is not true that anything goes.
No, that's not true. No.
All right. So how many fights have you had?
About 6 or 7. 4 and 3.
What's the intensity level? It seems like the most intense kind of fighting.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a great sport. I think it's definitely pretty intense. You know, it's just it's a lot of guys in the military do, especially the line of work I do. You know, mm-hmm. I'm always around it. Just makes sense to come back home and put a show on.
Can you mention the line of work you're in or not?
Sure. You keep, yeah.
I'm just curious. So, you just mentioned it.
I'm out in Virginia Beach. I don't really like to talk too much about that, but It's a good time. It's a privilege to serve. I'm a huge military supporter. I love coming home and dedicating these shows to all the men and women in uniform, first responders, police, law enforcement.
If you had to speculate on what the average military member thinks about whether you should be able to have your service weapon with you, your guns, what do you think the average military person would say?
I would hope 100% would say, yeah, you should be able to carry it all times, even on base. I think it's pretty ridiculous, especially what happened in Tennessee.
But also in Fort Hood, I mean, you've got
absolutely
30 people that were injured, and how many people were killed? Was it 16? I mean, some incredible number.
Unbelievable. So I think you should carry it all times, I think.
All right, so how many fights are going to be on this night, July the 18th?
We're going to have 13.
13 fights?
13 fights.
Now, how often are these things just like one kick, one punch knockout?
It happens. About every two, three fights would be a knockout. It's a good time. It's very exciting. One of the sponsors, Premier Distributing, plenty of cold beer there. Good time. Crowd gets rowdy. It's awesome.
How many people can fit into this area?
I think the convention center tops off at about 1,200. So we've sold a lot of tickets for the show. I'm really excited. I can't wait to see the turnout.
And so people get there at 6 and you kind of hang out till 7. It starts,
the bell ring coming in. Music will be playing, food, drinks. We'll have we actually have a little girl out of El Paso, Deanna Morales, I believe. She's singing the national anthem. She is amazing. And there'll be a ton of military people. We got a guy out of the Air Force, Antonio Jones, fighting out of Holman Air Force Base. And he's bringing he brings a crowd down. And, that's a ton of military folks, ton of law enforcement. We got one of the guys in the Sheriff's Department fighting tomorrow. It's an exciting card, exciting crowd for sure. It's a good time. I invite, encourage everybody to come out, take the time to support these guys that are local. Again, majority of them military. It's a good time.
And what would you say would be some reasons to get into MMA? I mean, most people would be afraid to break their face, right?
Right, right. No, it's a good sport. You learn a lot of life lessons, You should always like self-defense. I mean, that's, can't say enough about that, confidence, fitness for one, it's a ton of things go along with the sport. It's good stuff.
Okay, so how many, you said you've had 6 fights, are you 6-0?
No, unfortunately I'm not 6-0. I started really young, starting high school, fighting guys that probably should be fighting, but it's a lot of lessons learned. It's good stuff.
And sometimes there's injuries in this sport.
Oh, absolutely. It's like anything else. But, I don't think injuries are as bad as boxing. I think boxing's got a lot more head injuries
right
along with that.
All right. So tell us a little bit about your experience in the military in general. What was it like going in?
Well, I went back, joined back in, 06. And just went to the fleet for a little while. And, that's not why I joined the military. So, I knew why I joined, had to do what I had to do. And now I'm very lucky to serve where I'm serving.
Do the SEALs all come out of the Marines?
No, that's not true at all. No, it's all Navy.
All right, so it's all Navy. But the SEALs don't come out of the Marines?
No, sir.
Not at all.
It's all Navy.
And how many SEAL teams are there now? Any idea?
I don't want to get too much into that.
All right, so what would be the argument for kids to join the military if you had a younger brother?
Well, for one, serve your country. You can't, it doesn't have to be the military. You serve community, state government, but I think everyone should serve at some point. And then, just the stuff that comes along with learning life lessons, growing up, maturing, the discipline, being accountable for your act. Being accountable, that's huge. I feel like a lot of people today aren't accountable for their actions. So that's definitely one.
And do you have any idea how much longer you're going to stay in? Do you have any plans, 20 years?
Well, at this point, I'm at 9. So, yeah, I'm going to stick around for 20. I'm having a good time. I'm actually at the time of my life. So
yeah.
Having a blast.
All right. So, anyway, July the 18th, it's the Southwest Brawl 2.
Yes, sir.
Edgar Delgado. Is there a number that they can call or a website that they can go to find out more?
Well, at this point, we've sold a lot of tickets. I think the rest of the tickets, the convention center has them. They'll be selling them at the door.
All right.
Get them there. $30 general admission.
And that's tomorrow night.
It'll be full bar, full concession.
Is there an age limit to coming in?
No age limit.
A door's open at 6 and the fight starts at 7. Well, I want to thank you for coming in, Edgar, and also for serving the country, which is probably more meaningful.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
All right. Folks, I was trying to tell you, I had mentioned to you I'm just going to throw in a few things to stir the pot on. There's some people out there that are creationists, and I wanted to let you know I had run into a few facts. One is the last thing I mentioned to you, some Japanese scientists found, they did some measurements in a volcanic lake and found that wood could petrify, ossify within 20 to 30 years, believe it or not, under the right conditions. Now, here's another thing. I want to just throw it out. I don't claim to know how old the Earth is, but I can throw a little bit of science on you. There is some new research that's being done on the formation of areas like the Oregon Mountains. The Oregon Mountains, this area is very volcanic. Anybody who's traveled in New Mexico knows about the volcanic history here. There is something, though, called granite. You know what that is? It's kind of, you know, it's polished, it's cut open, it's shiny, it's got little crystals in it, it's very hard. Granite is formed when regular rock or regular soil comes into contact with magma or heat, high heat. It's melted and then it's at some point pushed up, and that's what a lot of these formations are made out of. They have found, instead of being millions of years to mountain ranges or these what they call plutons, they're formed underneath the soil, plutons, can be pushed up through vents not very many meters wide, a couple of meters wide, up to very, very big channels, and they're pushed up on top of this magma. They're pushed up in the air, and they can cool down very rapidly. And so you could see some of these granite formations and other formations occurring in say, less than 1,000 years, believe it or not. Now, that's not in a lot of the older research, but it's some things that they've been looking into recently. So there is, if you want to argue a young potential for a young Earth, it's there. You can argue it. So anyway, I meant to do 5 days of that, but maybe next week I'll go over a couple of other things that I found when I was doing some research. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the guest today, Doug and Edgar. And get out to that fight July 18th. If you have any interest in this whatsoever, you have an opportunity. Starts at 6, doors open at 6. Go in and get your beer, and fight starts at 7. It's at the convention center. Anyway, have a great weekend. You've been listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, have a great weekend. I'll meet you back in 2 days. Ciao.